Ronald Jesse Real Aid. What was it like coming back to England after such a long absence in the Far East?
I was shocked to find that rationing was as tight as it was, and that coal was as short as it was, and that generally the country was having a pretty rough time economically. There was lots of unemployment. I enjoyed the scenery, which I'd missed being out in the Pacific for so long. And whilst I was out there, I had ordered a bicycle, and I had resolved to cycle the whole length of the Foss Way in the event I used it only around Hampshire and Sussex. But nevertheless, it was a jolly enjoyable thing to get and see the green trees, the soft green trees, rather than the forests of the of Asia and of parts of New Zealand. It was a much softer scenery in the UK, which I had missed, and I was very pleased to discover it again. I would cycle around Sussex, I remember, and just spend hours sitting on a downside, contemplating. So it was about this time that I met my wife Edna, and I put the bicycle to one side and invested in a motorcycle, so that I could go from New Haven to Portsmouth, where Edna worked, and my home was, at weekends. And I could also use this motorcycle to go between New Haven and Hove, instead of keep catching buses, which took much longer. And it was quite fun doing my courting with Edna up around the beauty spots of Sussex and Hampshire. And I would meet up with my friend Victor Payne and his girlfriend, and we would meet at a public house and have a couple of jars, and then go our various ways again at the weekends. All in all, it was a dramatic change from being a member of a ship's company to an independent individual living in somebody else's house and being catered for by that somebody else. I had always been provided for. I'd always been provided for by the Navy. Since the age of 12, I had been sitting in a mess, and the meals had been catered for by somebody else, and I never knew what it was until meal time arrived, and I knew nothing at all about food. I knew nothing at all about catering or table manners. Well, I suppose I knew a few basic table manners, but it was a real shock to live in somebody else's house and behave in a mannerly, proper way. Also, the person I'd chosen to have a room with had an epileptic daughter, a poor soul, and this epileptic daughter took a fancy to me. It was a real embarrassment to this epileptic daughter. She was older than me. She was about 30, 35, something like that, and I was only 25. and she took a fancy to me, and it was a real embarrassment to have a meal at the table with an epileptic daughter who was liable to have a fit at any moment. And I don't think I enjoyed that part of my life very much, that side of it, at all.
So
the time came, oh sorry.
I was just going to say, it sounds very much like having an ordinary day job.
It's an ordinary day job, that's right. I would walk down to the depot from my lodgings in the morning, and I would prepare the evening's classes, and I also had to prepare demonstration engines and workshop facilities for the tradesmen who were in the volunteer reserve, and for the non-tradesmen I had to have demonstration classes prepared for the evening, and so I had quite a bit of workshop work to do, and I did the organising for the battery across the board. I organised drills for the seamen, and there was a big gun, I remember, set up in this thing called the battery. There was a big gun set up, and I had to have everything ready for them to do their gun drill. Not that I knew anything about guns, but when the parade was on, a seaman petty officer arrived to give the seamen their tuition, and I took the stokers and the artificers away to give them my tuition, and it was all very interesting. And there was a little ship attached to the division, a little motor minesweeper. It had all its batteries taken out. Motor minesweepers trailed a long cable, and there was a monumental set of batteries that gave an enormous pulse of current through this cable to set off magnetic mines. All the batteries had been taken out, and the cable had been taken off the reel at the back. So it was just a ship with a front and a back, and an engine, basically. And we were able to go away at weekends and chunt around the Isle of Wight, and that's across to the coast of France and that sort of thing, and give people basic ship handling experience. And I would pull the pin out of the steering gear, and the chap who was doing his steering wasn't able to steer, and we would say, "Ship's unable to steer, sir," and we would have to rig up the tiller and get them to pass messages down from the bridge to the back with this tiller. I suppose it was 100 or 120 feet long, that's all. That was all good fun. We went on exercises once a year. Once we went to Norway, once we went to Oporto, once we went to Denmark, and those exercises were quite good fun. The time arrived when I was due to get married, and I came back, and we took a flat in New Haven. And that didn't suit us very long. And so we then took a furnished flat in Hove. And that was much better. We were more or less self-contained in the semi-basement. And I was able to put my motorcycle in the garden and go across the New Haven, as it were, in reverse from what I was doing before. And we were very happy there for getting on for a year. And then the end came in sight for this period of my life. And our first baby was born.
Did you have to go to sea after you?
And I said to the powers that be, please, I've just had a baby born. Could I stay a bit longer to look after it? No, they said, your period is up. You've got to go to sea again. And so we had to hurry up and find a place to buy in Portsmouth, and we bought a house in Portsmouth, and I joined HMS Kenya to go on an 18-month commission in the West Indies, and I was so, it's a mixture of emotions, I was very sorry to leave my family, and yet I was very pleased to get back to do some practical engineering again, rather than talking about it as I'd been doing for 2.5 years. Getting some practical engineering again, and I threw myself into the life of the ship's life to get it over with, get the period over with as soon as possible, and just to occupy myself with engineering. I remember I tore things to bits and put them together again, and tore them to bits again and put them together again. And to help pass the time, I embarked on a correspondence course in maths and physics and that sort of thing, which when all the other chaps were going ashore, I was sitting in the mess doing my correspondence course and saving money, as one does. And the only notable experience I have of that period in the East Indies fleet was steaming across the Indian Ocean to Mombasa to provide support in the Mau Mau uprising. They were threatening Mombasa, and had they taken over the power station and the harbour and that sort of thing, it would have been extremely disruptive to Kenya's economy. So we appeared in the harbour with all our big guns and our flags and everything, and I was assigned to look after the power station and run the power station if it had been brought to a standstill. And the Marines were assigned to do things, and the sailors were going to do something else. But in the event, the Mau Mau uprising subsided, and we weren't needed after all. And so we came home from that commission after 18 months, and I was very naughty. I wrote to Edna and I said, I don't want you to come down to the quayside because I don't think I could stand it. And so I regained my family's contact. I was walking down from the bus down to our house, and she and my daughter were walking up towards the bus, and there we were.
Well, what rank did you have?
I was by this time a chief engineering artificer. I was the top of the flight, and I have no doubt at all that had I stayed in the Navy and gone on, I was at the age of 30 by then, and I stayed in the Navy and gone on to the age of 40, I would have made commissioned rank and probably finished up as a lieutenant commander, as most of my colleagues did, of my ilk, of people I've met in reunions at the age of 60. Most of them did. But I was disenchanted with the Navy at that time. The heart had gone out of it. Efficiency had gone out of it, and I would much rather be a husband than a number on an allotment book, which I was when I was away at sea.
Can you compare your experience on the Kenya with the Belfast?
A very similar ship in design, very similar activities, very similar watchkeeping, very similar everything, except that it had no heart, it had no soul, it had no reason for being. It was perfunctorily pursuing a necessary job, I suppose, although frankly I didn't see the point in having an East Indies fleet. There wasn't anybody threatening us. There wasn't any peace to be maintained. I suppose we chased a few pirates, and that's about all. We went and aimed our guns at things, but it wouldn't have mattered tuppence whether we did or not in the event. And I think this same feeling permeated throughout the ship. We did exercises, but we're always doing exercises, and there was no heart in it. And I think I've mentioned earlier that one of our boilers was out of action for several weeks. I know full well that it could have been put back into action, or even taken out of the ship and another one put in. If there had been enthusiasm about it and a real need for it, but it didn't matter. So, and people lost heart, and I lost heart. And so eventually that, plus the fact that I got fed up with being a number of an allotment book, I left the Navy. Much to my father's disappointment. I know he wanted me to go on to get my pension at the age of 40, and I would then draw it for more years out of the Navy than I was in the Navy. And he thought I was being extremely foolish, and he was very disappointed. But in the event, the rest of my life turned out to be much more successful than if I had stayed in the Navy.
Did you leave as soon as you'd returned home after your tour of duty with the camp?
Practically, to all intents and purposes. I did a couple of months on the restoration of, I did a couple of months on the preservation for storage of little coastal minesweepers. And we had to go around to Hythe every day and take all the petrol out of the tanks and seal up the engines and so that they could be drawn up on the hard at Hythe and put into cold storage should they be wanted because we were then in the Cold War, and it was foreseen that the Russians would mine every port in the country, and we would have to take extreme measures to counter this mining attack. That lasted for 2 or 3 months, and I came to the age of 30 and left.
Can you remember the date?
The 5th of January, 1954.
Did the Navy help you prepare for civilian life?
No.
No,
there was no scheme available, no such scheme. I left the Navy. I can just mention this little point that stuck with me. I left the Navy. I was sent to Portsmouth Barracks to do all my final clearing zappings. And I was 4 o'clock in the afternoon when my day's duties were finished, I suppose. And I walked through the gate, and I saluted the officer of the watch on the gate, and I walked through the gate, and that was the end of me in the Navy. Subsequent jobs I've had, there's been parties, there's been gifts, there's been hullabaloo, and there's been a big deal made of it. Not so with leaving the Navy. Just a salute to the man on the quarterdeck.
Did you get a demob suit or anything like that?
I suppose I did, yes. I suppose I got a demob suit. Actually, I had already had a very snazzy civilian suit, including a trilby hat and smart shoes with multicoloured leather upper works made in Hong Kong when I was in the Pacific Fleet. And we were allowed to walk ashore sometimes in our civilian clothes, and very smart we looked too. I still had that suit to wear, but Edna didn't like it very much, so I guess that didn't count for much. Yes, I suppose I did have a demob suit, but I don't remember that very much. I was married in the naval uniform, and when our families were growing up, I don't remember putting on smart clothes very much. Not for some years. I suppose I had a suit of some sort, but wasn't a big thing in my life.
Did you have to hand your uniform back?
Yes, I had to hand the uniform back. I know that you could keep your best uniform that you walked out in. Keep that if you wanted. And I kept my hammock. And that was very useful. Because the hammock consisted of a hammock and a mattress and and blankets. And we put the blankets on the baby sometimes when it was cold weather. So yes, I kept that, and a naval suitcase, that came in very handy. In fact, I bought two grips type, which were available through naval stores. I bought two of those, one for Edna and one for me to go on our honeymoon with. And I have still got one in the wardrobe to this day, which comes in handy sometimes. I put a chromium-plated E on one and a chromium-plated R on the other. So that was that. And it's strange that having spent from the age of 12 to 30, that's 28 years, isn't it? 28 years? 12 to 30?
No, it's 18 years.
18 and 12, 30 years. It's strange, spent 18 years either in or associated with the Navy, that I could take part company with it so easily and with no regrets.
What did you do afterwards?
Well, I fell flat on my feet because I was very interested in gas turbines. I knew absolutely all there was to know about a steam turbine, and it seemed to me that it was a natural step to the gas turbine, where instead of having a huge big boiler to produce your steam and drive the turbine, you just switched on some petrol or paraffin, lit a flame, and you did away with the boiler. It was such a natural progression. And I was very interested in them. And I saw in a publication on gas turbines about a place called Pistock, where there was a government establishment called the National Gas Turbine Establishment. And I went to them for a job. And I said, I want a job on gas turbines, which is a very useful start in the conversation. And they said, what's your background? And I told them what my background was. And they said, we have the very thing for you. We have here a ship's machinery installation. That's boilers, turbines, condensers, the lot. Taken out of a ship and put up on dry land for testing purposes. I mean, to drive things. And I said, well, you know, it's a natural for me because I can walk straight into that job without thinking. And so I did. And I went to and fro from our house in Portsmouth for some months working at Pistock. And my first day at work there, there was a works bus, and I didn't know where it collected people from in Aldershot, and I went to the wrong street corner and missed it on my first day. So I had precious little money that I hired a taxi and took a taxi to work. I think I'm the only chap ever to take a taxi to work, to Pistock at any rate. And I got there on time. And as I was very interested and enthusiastically joined in with the driving of this ship's turbine, which was specially geared up to drive air compressors, and I did that job very enthusiastically for a year or so before I became a foreman.
Can I ask you, You mentioned earlier when you were shore-based how you found it novel in the way that food was prepared within the family.
Yes.
Were there other things you noticed on leaving the Navy that were that you had to adjust to? Did you have any difficulty in adjusting to ordinary civilian life?
Yes, I think I did. When I got married, I found it difficult to adjust to home life and home routine and even basic things like sharing the bathroom, doing one's share of the cleaning and cooking.
A lot of men have trouble with that.
Yes. Yes. I think I mentioned to you that food and taking meals is something very, very ingrained, had been ingrained into me, that it appeared, you ate it and you went. And to have decent manners at the table, to conform to civilized practice at the table, is something I had to start and learn at the age of 30. And to this day, I find I do things which are odd in the eyes of my wife, and which I have to think hard about to conform. And I don't like. I don't say I wouldn't, but I don't like the thought of taking Holy Communion in church, because taking meals to me is something which is a communal activity where you should be talking to each other, you should be experiencing a common. A basic thing, which is eating, around the table, and not at the communion, doing something artificial at the communion rail. I don't relate to that at all. And one of our basic principles in our married life is to have at least one meal a day with a family around the table, and people sit at the table. They don't get down once they've sat to the table, and we converse as a family at least once a day, and in practice most times of the day, most meals of the day, I should say.
Any other adjustments that you had to make?
I've found it hard to sleep sometimes when I'd had a hard day. I found it hard to unwind and sleep, and I'd sometimes have memories of horrendous experiences in the Navy, and these would come flooding back, and so I would not be able to sleep as well as I know I ought to be able to. I mean, I go over the Scharnhorst experience in my dreams quite often. Not that there was anything horrendous that happened to me, but that it was a horrendous experience in all, and the ifs and buts must be going, are still going through my mind, as I'm sure they're going through thousands of other people's minds. The ifs and buts were very weighty, and I can wake up in the night and be thinking about them. Otherwise, I think I settled down fairly well.